702.
Let's walk the talk on 92.7
and 106 FM.
25 to 11, 072-702-1702. If you've just joined us, thank you very much. And in the past half hour, we were focusing on child trafficking, and Tertia de Klerk was giving us some pointers to look out for and some very scary statistics. It's truly worrying what we are going through as a country and generally as the world around these issues of child trafficking. We just need to be more cautious. And the takeaway from that is that even if you suspect, it's better to be wrong than to have looked away completely. And very, very, very important issues, I thought so. 011-883-0702. Another concerning issue here on the continent is the fact that the Niger's military government, you might have heard, announced their end of an agreement with the United States that allowed the U.S. military to carry out operations in their country. And this came days after holding some interesting and very awkward, might I add, high-level talks with U.S. diplomatic and military officials. And Niger has been under military rule since July 2023. You'd remember after Mohamed Bazoum was kicked out by the army. And so military rulers in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso also kicked out the French and other European forces. And we thought, let's have a word with none other than Dr. Adir Akinola, who's head of research and teaching at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation. Doc, thanks very much for your time. Welcome to 702. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having me on your program.
What was this long incoming, where the Niger's military authority was intending to kick out the U.S.? Has this been brewing for quite some time, or is it just the spur of the moment decision?
Thank you so much. I don't think it was actually a spur of the moment decision. You recall, immediately the military struck last year, I think it was on 26 July last year, the military government, and particularly even with the legislature, began to debate their response to the coup. And one of what was heavily debated at the level of the legislature in the U.S. was the suspension of all assistance to Niger. Not only economic assistance, there was also a debate on the floor of the House by senators to also withdraw every military personnel from Niger. There were very strong arguments for and against. Many of the senators and U.S. officials believed that if they withdraw their U.S. base and they withdraw their military assistance to Niger, particularly in terms of foot personnel and their air armament in Niger, it will give space for other emerging powers like Russia, its Wagner group, like Iran, and even China, giving them a space. So after they debated it, they all agreed to retain. In fact, it was actually put into vote, and the senator voted 86 against 11. That was last year. So the Niger government were also following those debates. So they knew that there was a plan to actually withdraw their military service, but they later agreed to station the military there in Niger, not because of Niger particularly, but because of U.S. strategic interests, not only in Niger, but in the neighboring countries, both in the West and North Africa. So the Niger government were aware that the only reason the military personnel were still in Niger was not because of to just secure the people, but also for their own interest. So when there was a disagreement, particularly when the team that came to Niger last week, led by the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, I think his name is Molly, and the U.S. African Command Head, General Langley, visited Niger, and they had these hot discussions about how Niger should severe its ties with Russia and not invite any of the Eastern countries to be partner and all of that. So at that point in time, Niger official just decided it is better to kick the United States out of their territorial integrity.
The meeting seems to have been a very awkward one, and as Niger officials are saying that the delegation was received out of courtesy, and apparently they did not even respect the diplomatic practices. It was imposing on them. They didn't even mention how many, what sort of delegation they had, and the composition of their delegation and the purpose of the visit. They just imposed themselves into Niger. This clearly speaks to souring relations that have happened over time, but I thought maybe give us a bit of a hint as to if the US can truly afford to have its absence in Niger, given its concerns about terrorism and, lest we forget, its selfish economic interest.
The truth is just that whatever Niger is complaining about now is something that has been happening over the decades. That has been the way the United States and other world powers have been relating to African countries. It's true that sometimes they don't respect their diplomatic arrangements, which some of the African governments would dismiss because they are weaker in terms of bargaining power, because they feel they need the United States. So they usually overlook that. So even if the key officials are saying that that's the reason, that's not the reason, it's something that has been ongoing for years. But coming back to your question, I don't think the U.S. can afford to be absent from Niger. Of course, they don't have a choice but to leave. But we actually be a loss to Niger. We have to remember why they came to Niger in the first place. It was not only to secure Niger, but when you look around Niger, you look at Libya after the exit of Gaddafi and the destruction of Libyan and the proliferation of arms, and not only arms, and fighters from Libya down through the Sahel through Mali, Niger, and other countries like Burkina Faso. We also have Boko Haram in Nigeria. So there are instabilities all around. And what the U.S. would have done was to find an ally like Niger Republic that was relatively stable so that they can station their presence and begin to fight against those jihadist insurgency linked to ISIS, linked to Al-Qaeda. So the Niger was very strategic to the United States. And you also recall that they have invested a lot. The drone station they have in Niger was constructed at about $110 million. And every year they were using about $30 million to maintain it. And they would be using it to man surveillance system, intelligence gathering. And like we also know, to also protect their strategic interest around the Sahel and even in West Africa. So it would really be a great loss to the United States if they were to completely exit Niger.
Yeah, I mean, the Air Base 201, very expensive construction there to just let it go like that. But it is the concern of relationships with Russia and China and the confirmation from Niger's military authority that indeed they have been interacting with Russia as far as weaponry is concerned. So this means that for some reason, the separation could also be more ideological than practical.
That was what I said initially. Yeah. The United States is concerned, just like we have in Mali, where they have pushed France out of their country. Yeah. You also remember the allies between Mali, Burkina Faso, and there's this anti-West posture being generated in the Sahel. And the United States and their Western allies cannot be comfortable with it, because one thing is for you to be ideological. If the ideological is inward looking, they will have been less concerned. If it is just about Pan-Africanism, Africa seeking its own solution within the continent. But they know that that's not the case, that the United States and its allies, the NATO, the European Union, the Western country have been pushed out of the Sahel and West Africa, particularly the western part of West Africa. And there is this blanket invitation to the Eastern Bloc, talking about Russia, talking about China, and even Iran, and even Turkey are beginning to also demonstrate its influence. Even this a country like Saudi Arabia are coming into the space. So it's like a recognition of the old world. What do we call it? Cold War politics that is being reenacted now in the region. So the battle is not just about Niger, it's about strategic power bigger than Niger, talking about the Russia in one side with China, with Iran, then we have the US and its allies on the other side. So it's really a strategic battle that is bigger than Niger, bigger than the Sahel. It's actually a global hostility being played out in the region currently.
It's 15 minutes to 11 o'clock. You're on 702. Welcome to it. I'm Thabo, in for Clement, and we're speaking about the Niger military government that has just cut its military cooperation with the United States. After the break, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Adio Akinola, who's head of research and teaching at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation.
For more about 702,
go to primemediaplus.com.
12 minutes now, 11 to 11 on 702. Feel free to join us in our conversation. And I don't mean to monopolize the conversation. If you'd like to join in, you are most welcome to do so. 011-883-0702. 011-883-0702. Alternatively, a voice note or a text message to 072-702-1702. On Twitter, at I Am Free TSM, at Radio 702. I'd love to hear your views. And again, if you've just switched on, we are speaking about what is happening in Niger, where the military authority there has just cut its ties with U.S. military cooperation. And they seem to be going their more far eastern way, like Russia, China, Iran, and others. They are saying that they have completely cut ties with the U.S. Military. You'd remember that as of last year, there was a strong presence of military presence in Niger. That's after the overthrow of Mohamed Bazoum, the former president of that country. My guest, who knows far more than me on these issues, Dr. Adioye Akinola, who's head of research and teaching at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation, joins us at this present moment. Feel free to call in and ask him any question related to the subject at hand, or offer your own opinion on the matter. I was just wondering, Dr. Akinola, about what this implies for the future of Niger as far as election timetable is concerned, and generally the state of affairs. Are we going to see the status quo prevailing, where the military authority holds on to power for a little longer before they set date for elections or even express an appetite for a civilian government?
Thank you. As you must have noted in the last few weeks, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, lifted its economic sanctions on Niger. Of course, they still retain political sanctions. That means Niger cannot sit within ECOWAS and begin to vote or deliberate. And ECOWAS will not support Niger politically if they want to vie for anything internationally. But what they have done was to lift the economic sanction they have imposed, which has actually pushed the Nigerian into the brinks of poverty, deepening this disassociation with economic productivity. But what does this signify? That means ECOWAS itself has seen some progress actually in Niger. They have also noted that, of course, the military might be there for a few years, but the military are not poised to stay in power forever. They have come in and they will soon relinquish power to a civilian administrator. There have been high-level meetings between not only ECOWAS, the global communities and the military leadership in Niger, not only in Niger and the other countries. And there's this agreement that they will relinquish power. Ordinarily, ECOWAS usually give them maximum of 2 years, but they have also come to the understanding that things are changing now, and they may likely spend more than 2 hours, but there's this commitment that they will relinquish power to civilian administration. But the question is, will some of the military leaders also pull down their military uniform, take civilian civilian clothes, and become the civilian leader? So those are the questions that is still hanging around some of those countries where they have struck.
We've seen that in our northern neighbor, in form of a deputy president, that side, who took off the military epaulets to wear a suit and become a deputy president of the country. But Are you able to give us a sense of sort, especially in South Africa? Koketso, I'm going to come to you in just 1 second. Please hang tight. Are you able to give us, Doctor, about the situation on the ground? How are the civilians, the residents, the people of Niger feeling about this? Are they slightly a little bit edgy about the removal of the U.S.? What is the feeling of an ordinary person on the ground? Because at times we have a tendency to just impose a helicopter view on these regional issues without getting a sense or a texture of what an ordinary person on the ground feels.
Thank you so much. And what we had, because there were meetings and we have been part of some of those engagements, particularly with civil society actors, the ordinary man on the street just wants food on his table.
Mm.
He wants security.
Mm.
And the truth is just that even despite the presence of this 110 million investment in drones, in surveillance system, people are still living in fear. There are still insecurity across the Sahel. Despite the presence of UN troops, even in many of these countries, we still have those local insurgent groups terrorizing the people. In northern, even northern Niger, there are still insecurity. In Burkina Faso, there are still insecurity. In Mali, so in Niger, what the people don't care if the United States is there or not. What they just want is, can we guarantee security?
Yeah.
Can I get food to eat? Even some of the time, you have seen them jubilating the overthrow of some of the civilian government, because they also believe that some of them have become more Western than Westerners themselves. They have implemented liberalism to the extreme level, where the people have also been disassociated even from governors. Of course, Bazoum was a great ally of the West, but the truth is, if you go to Niger, what kinds of development will you see in Niger? Many of them are still poor.
Sure.
So they just want security, peace. It doesn't matter if U.S. exceeds the country. It doesn't matter if Wagner mercenaries are in their country. They don't care if it is China, if it is Iran. They just want improvements in their living condition.
And
that's what the military has promised them.
And speaking of which, there was a concern from John, and I'd like you to respond to John after I take Koketso's call, please, if you will. Just pair those two questions and respond to them accordingly as we wrap up the show. John says, please talk about the Wagner influence in the Sahel. Russia has been a bad actor in the region for decades. Koketso, your opportunity. Thanks for your patience. Welcome. The floor is yours.
Yes, hi, Thabo. Thanks so much for your discussion. I think for me, the best case scenario would be if we wouldn't have any foreign troops on African soil, right? But given what's happened to us historically with our colonial powers, where basically, colonialism, according to me, just never really ended. Just what happened was that these people decided to rebrand. So they still kept their military bases in our country.
Mm.
And all they simply did was, make sure that they install their Western public leaders and keep us militarily weak, and keep Africa from militarily developing and becoming militarily strong. So, as much as Russia might not be a solution for us, but I feel like it takes a devil to go after another devil, right? So we need a militarily strong country like Russia to almost like dislodge these Western countries from Africa, because they're not going to leave just by us asking them to go. It's not going to happen like that.
Mm.
The only way they're going to leave is if they see that, like, look, this country now has another country that's militarily strong, that's perhaps maybe a nuclear power that can take us on, and they want us gone. If you look at what happened with Niger was such a travesty what ECOWAS did to Niger. They cut off the electricity supply to Niger, killing many, many Nigerians, because people were in hospital at the time when they just abruptly decided to cut off electricity supply and cut off fuel and cut off everything else. And they didn't for 1 second stop to consider their African brothers, their fellow African brothers, They acted unilaterally like that because why? They were acting on behalf of the Western puppet masters. So it's quite tragic, that what's happening to Africa. But I think, in our lifetime, I certainly hope that Africa can shake off the, colonialism, that still breaks us to this very day,
Gotcha.
This is from the 1960s, and we still having to contend with our minerals being taken for next to nothing.
Certainly. Koketso, let me give the good doctor an opportunity to respond. Doc, if you just wrap up these two in less than a minute, if you will, we've run flat out of time, including John's question about Wagner influence as well.
Thank you. Let me just make this clear. All international politics has no morality. States will get involved in another man's country because of their economic interests. Maybe China, maybe Russia, maybe the United States, they have the same interest. The Wagner Group cannot enforce peace. They cannot even maintain peace, even in their own country. Talk less of enforcing peace in African countries. They are failing in Ukraine, even in Russia. There are all kinds of hostility between the state and the Wagner Group. But one thing that is clear is that African countries, particularly those smaller countries, do not have the capacity to secure their people and the properties within the state. They need external support. And that maybe that's why we can turn to African Union or maybe ECOWAS to actually help some of those countries. And I think I also have to make the record very straight. It was not ECOWAS that cut off electricity to Niger. There were two sanctions that were immediately imposed on Niger. One was imposed by ECOWAS, the other was imposed by Nigerian government, because the chair of the ECOWAS was President Tinubu of Nigeria. So it was Nigeria that cut off electricity, not ECOWAS.
Gotcha.
So that should be clear. But one thing that is clear is just that Africans have failed themselves. Many of the leaders have also failed to assist some of those countries struggling with security and an economic problem.
Yeah.
And unless Africans come together to provide this solution, many of these countries will continue to look outside Africa for military assistance.
Sure. Doc, unfortunately, I have to go. Really appreciate your insights. Dr. Adio Akinola, Head of Research and Teaching at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation.